Pack your bags. It's time to visit Las Vegas, America's capital for fun and entertainment. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
Welcome to Vegas Never Sleeps. I'm Stephen Maggi. Today we're going to meet the new chef over at Emeril Gazi's New Orleans Fish House at the MGM. We'll also meet award-winning author and entertainer Andy Martello. Then we'll talk to a couple of guys from Infinity Gaming and the Silver Sevens Hotel as they bring a new form of gambling to the Strip that's never been seen there before. Our Vegas insider joins us talking about casinos and how they don't always make a lot of money. We'll visit the Casino Hall of Fame, discussing a couple of greats from the past, Liberace and the McGuire sisters. But up first, a new chef and an old favorite at the MGM. Everybody's heard of Emeril Gazi. He has fantastic restaurants all over the world, particularly here in Las Vegas. And at the MGM, the New Orleans Fish House is always a favorite. And we're here talking to the brand new chef de cuisine, Jean-Paul Lapidy. Now, Jean-Paul, tell me, you've worked here before. Are you excited coming back to the Fish House?
Oh, I'm super excited. I mean, I always joke that this is the easiest training I've gotten in a new job because I was lucky enough to be a sous chef, executive sous chef, and chef de cuisine here at the Fish House for, I want to say, like 12 years. Then I took about a 6-7 year kind of break, did a couple things throughout the Strip, and landed back here about a couple months ago. So I'm very excited again to be back in a house that feels like I kind of helped build, you know.
Yeah, it's exciting. And a lot of people, of course, have followed Emeril through his TV career and so forth. And the one thing we know about all his restaurants are it's really to please people. Has it helped working for him? I mean, does that kind of philosophy ring through all his work on these restaurants and such?
100%. You know, and that's something I learned from him. Believe it or not, I was pretty shy when I came in through the ranks and you know, working with Chef Emeril, especially in the New Orleans store where I started as a cook, saw the showmanship that this gentleman have, you know, and it's all about the guest, you know. When people come to his restaurants, he wants them to make feel like this. We're so happy that they're here. And that's worked for us for many, many, many years. And again, he's very hands-on, not only with food and manage the restaurant, but how his guests feel when they come to his shops.
Yeah, one thing I've always enjoyed, and I'm sure you do it here, is you make sure that people get what they want. Some of these places, you can't order special or anything like that. You like to work with folks, don't you?
Oh, also 100%. You know, the cities like this one, New Orleans, you know, L.A., the competition is super, super brutal. You know, I mean, we have 7-8 great restaurants just in our hotel alone. So if we don't do this for these folks, they're going to go somewhere else. You know, and they come here and they're on vacation. They want to have a good time. Some people have to deal with allergies. Some people with, you know, things they just don't like to eat. So we try to accommodate those as much as possible. Again, we have to kind of keep in mind that there's all the guests here in the restaurant as well. But we try to, you know, if I have to go into a table and ask somebody what exactly that they want, I'll be more than happy to do that to make sure they have a great experience with us.
You know, you've had a great career. Talk a little about, you know, when you started out in the world of culinary, you know, is this kind of like what you always dreamed of? I mean, you know, how does that work if somebody's listening to this saying, God, I'd like to be like him in 10 years or what have you?
You know, Vegas is a great city to kind of create or build your career because you have so many great restaurants from all over the world here. So within, you know, 5-6 years, you can have 3 or 4 great restaurants on your resume. So, I mean, when I started as a cook, you know, you always see that you want to own your restaurant. People don't really understand how hard and how much time away from family and everything that takes. So it's a lot easier to do it with some of these, you know, super hardcore chefs that they already figure it out. You know, you come in and you help them do what they need to do. But here in Vegas, again, it's a lot. You can do that a lot faster than in any other cities. You know, a beginning cook can become a chef within 5-6 years in here because you have so much knowledge in the city where that might take you a little longer in another city. So I was super excited to come in here and learn from everybody else and put that into our menu, into our technique.
Chef de cuisine, it's a really interesting position, and it's got to be really important because, as you say, the pressure's sort of on in the sense that there's so much competition in this town.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and nowadays, people really cherish their dollar. So you, I mean, before people come in here and try. Oh, we'll spend $100 and see how it is. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, people don't come here until they're pretty sure that they're gonna good investment back on their money. So we have to be on all the time. The pressure is on, but again, it's a fun environment. You know, as long as you have a good staff that can help you do what you do, you know, hey, you can be the best chef in the world. I am definitely not. But if I don't have a bunch of guys and girls back there helping me in the right direction, we will never get it done. So the pressure is there. But as soon as you train your staff and welcome them every day to your kitchen, it's going to be good.
Let's talk about the restaurant itself. Beautiful location, very pleasing to the eye. Now, my wife and I, let's use us as an example. My wife loves fish. So she hears Fish House, New Orleans Fish sounds great. I'm not a fish eater, but I was looking at your menu. It seems like a lot of the other Lagazzi restaurants as well. You do feature beef, so you have something for everybody.
Oh, we do have to have something for everybody, especially, again, going back to Vegas. You have a lot of reunions, for example, college reunions, bachelorettes, bachelor parties. There's no way, you know, you're going to get 10 folks to eat the same thing. So even though we're in New Orleans, style restaurant and a seafood house, we always have to have other things to please the entire, you know, spectrum of guests that we have. We're working on a brand new pork chop that we're putting on a menu here in a week or so. We have prime steaks that we get from the Midwest. So we do have a little bit of everything. You know, we have putting rabbit on our menu here next week. So we try to find what's best out there for the season, and we bring it in again to give people a good amount of choices.
Well, yeah, and the position chef de cuisine, there's a lot of responsibility. I was looking at some of these things. You know, you've got to come up with new stuff. And again, with all this competition, you can't just serve the same thing all the time. What are some things we can look for? You said rabbit on the menu. That's kind of exciting. What are some of the things you're kind of looking at maybe to bring your own flavor into this restaurant?
All right, so we haven't had a pork in the restaurant for a while. You know, we make sausages here, but we want to bring that back. So the rabbit we want to bring into a sausage we make here in the restaurant. The pork chop that we're bringing, it's going to be cured, so it's going to be molasses cured. So it's just nuts to chop. We're trying to kind of do some things that maybe a lot of our guests can't do at their own house. You know, we bring in pork belly. We'll have pork belly in our lunch menu. We have a brand new pork belly slider. So I mean, and that's part of the fun and the challenge of being a chef. Not only you have to deal with your daily operation, but like you said, with the competition in here that everybody's doing the same thing, you have to kind of keep creating dishes and see what's going to happen next season and so on. And you cannot wait for October, for example, to have your full menu. You have to start building that, you know, beginning of August kind of thing to make sure all your ingredients are going to be here, that the ingredients are going to be available throughout the whole season. So when people see a plate get to their table, it's a lot of work that goes behind it, and that's part of the fun.
One of the most exciting things about being a chef now and here and so forth has to be some of the freedom you have. You know, it's not like the old days where they're just steakhouses. They all serve kind of the same thing, what have you. And the fact that the shows out there, like all the Food Network stuff, plus Anthony Bourdain, all that kind of thing, that you can experiment a little, and people seem to be open for this. Does that kind of get your creative juices going?
Oh, big time. You know, especially here in the United States, it seems like we change everything. And that's why people love Americans and people hate Americans, because, you know, you get some classic stuff and we gotta change it. So here we have the freedom to do whatever we want, and people will look at it as like, oh, that's what you guys do. So they welcome that, and we take full advantage of it. You know, especially again in a city like this, when we're in the middle of the desert, but we get delivery 7 days a week from all over the world. So we take again full advantage of what we can get throughout this great world. You know,
Jean-Paul, I can't wait to eat some of the delicacies you got on there. This is a great restaurant. If people want to find out more about either you, the restaurant, and so forth, where can we go on social media? We got any place we can go?
You know, we have our website, and we're in the middle of changing that because, again, we've been started here, and the season's changing. A lot of the changes are going to be happening. So I hope people are patient when they look at our website because, again, we're changing on a weekly basis almost. So sometimes it's hard to get the IT guys to kind of follow us. But, you know, it's all for the good thing. You know, if you come to the restaurant and you saw a dish, maybe that was on a website, we'll do whatever we can to kind of recreate that for you, even if it's not in the menu right now. And that's part of the thing of me going to the table and talking to our guests to make sure that they're going to have a good experience. That's part of my job as well. Even though I'm in the back of the house, I take full responsibility on the enjoyment of our guests when they come in.
We're certainly looking forward to it. It's at the MGM Grand. Big place, but go to the district. You'll find it right in front. Thanks, Sean Paul. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Time now for a chat with our Vegas insider, Scott Robin of VitalVegas.com. Today's show destroys the old myth that anyone with a gaming license can get rich. Just because you have a casino does not mean you're going to make a killing. You can, but it certainly doesn't mean you will.
That's right. There's no guarantee of that at all. And even the ones that are here that you think all the formula is right, they're still struggling. SLS Las Vegas has had a very difficult time of it. Downtown Grand has had a rough time of it. Cosmopolitan until recently never made a penny. It only recently has started becoming profitable. It's you get a new set of managers, a new marketing philosophy, and then you can turn it around. But there is no guarantee. And I think that situation has been exacerbated by the changes in the way people play. The casino always subsidized the other parts of the business. So there were shows that were loss leaders. Jubilee is a perfect example for Caesars. It was at Bally's, but it's for Caesars Entertainment. That show was a loss leader. You potentially draw people in because they're going to gamble. Well, that doesn't work anymore. You can't have loss leaders, but that's because people are gambling less. Just overall, there's less interest in gambling. So a restaurant has to stand on its own. A show has to stand on its own. That's a big shift in the way the Las Vegas economy works. It's interesting, but I think everybody's going, now what do we do? The casino was always the sure thing.
Tune in every week to our Vegas insider, Scott Robin, and visit his highly acclaimed blog at VitalVegas.com. When we come back, you'll meet an entertainer, fire eater, plate spinner, and best-selling author all in one, Andy Martello. You are listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
From the famous to the fascinating, in a climate as fun, fast, and flashy as Las Vegas, this is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
I'm here with Logan Reed, my own personal business coach that does so much more than just business. Logan, do you find that people come to you thinking about business and ended up leaving, where it's really about their entire life?
That's actually a great question, because what I find is that people often come to me and ask, am I a business coach? Am I a career coach? Am I a life coach? And I say, I don't care what you call me, because when you change any part of your life, so if we're talking about your career or your relationship, it's going to change everything. So when we make changes in one part, it touches every part of our life.
So how do we get involved? How do we get more information about you and what you're doing?
Sure. You can give me a call at 360-529-1848 or email me at Logan@LoganReedCoaching.com. And you could also check out my website if you want to learn more about me at LoganReedCoaching.com.
Waste management has earth-friendly plans that fit the biggest corporations and recycling programs to help smaller companies get started. We're there for you every night and on the job with you every day. When you put waste management to work, you get an environmental partner. And big ideas for every size business. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management. To learn more, visit WM.com.
When you come to Las Vegas and you want to see entertainers, there's all sorts of different things out there, be it magicians, be it comedians, be it singers and so forth. We got a guy that does all that and more. He's amazing. His name is Andy Martello. He's an MC, variety performer, actor, comedian, award-winning author. We're going to talk about all that with him today. Andy, great having you here. Wow.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very, very much. Thank you so much. I apologize if you hear a lot of surface noise. I am standing on a street in Wilmington, Delaware, where I'm about to go on stage in a couple of hours, and this, oddly enough, is the only place I get service. So if you hear cars and you hear screaming people, that's what's going on.
Well, at least we know what that is. Now, you started out a Ringling Brothers graduate, and as soon as I saw that, I go, I can't wait to talk to this guy, because, Andy, what do you do at Ringling Brothers College and so forth? I'm really curious about it.
It was 1988, so it was back in the Stone Age, and I went right out of high school into Ringling Brothers Clown College, not necessarily because I wanted to become a clown, but because I wanted to learn a huge quantity of performance skills in a short amount of time. And quite literally, it was 14-hour days, 6 days a week, where you'd have classes which included everything from juggling, slaps and falls, basic stunts, pyrotechnics, costume building, prop construction, stilt walking, you name it. There was all sorts of things that we would learn, mime, you name it. There were tons and tons of different performing skills that would come in handy on the circus or elsewhere. And not the least of which, we also got massive amounts of PR training, because Ringling Brothers is, I don't know if it's still that case, but at the time, they were the third most recognized brand name in the world, 97% recognition rate in the world, which meant, you know, if you were in the bowels of Ethiopia and you said you worked for Ringling Brothers, 97 out of 100 people would go, oh, the circus, right? And so you always had to learn how to do your job well and represent a company well. So you learned a lot of things in a short amount of time.
Wow, that's incredible.
In 10.5 weeks I was out there. Yeah, it was only 10.5 weeks, but still,
wow.
I learned a lot.
No, that's incredible. And you're not one of these scary guys now out on the street. I'm glad to hear that as well, walking around.
Well, an argument could be made. I am one of the scary guys on the street. I am presently on a street in the eastern part of the world, and I was a clown. So technically, I could be.
Okay.
But these days, I'm really just scary because I eat fire and I do other stupid things.
Oh, we're going to talk about all that. Now, you were on NBC's Last Comic Standing. You know, what was that like? I mean, because, you know, you see it, it's a great show. That's harder than it looks, though, isn't it?
Well, now, I have the great distinction of being able to have Last Comic Standing on my resume without having had to go through any of the humiliating things that most of those comedians did. Because they ended up using, I was on the first season, and if you watch the show, and this is a story, I don't mind telling this because this is a story that's coming out in one of my books. I have a chapter in one of my books called Resume Confessions, where I set up to some of the lies that aren't quite lies on my resume. I was on the first episode and the last episode of the very first season. That was a season that had Dat Fan as the winner and Ralphie May as the runner-up, and a lot of fantastic, talented people. And like any other television show of that kind, these talent shows where they've got judges and things like that, they always loved having the people standing in line and the footage from your auditions and things like that. And for whatever reason, the camera crew and the producers absolutely loved me. The only people who didn't love me were the two people who decided if I should be on the show as a regular. And so they ended up using footage of my audition. You can see me eating fire. You hear me talking, telling jokes, things like that, but they only put me on in a montage in the first episode and the last episode. And oddly enough, I got so many phone calls from being on this television show, barely even 30 seconds to a minute, because it was very obviously me, and I have a very distinct voice and a distinct look. And I ended up getting just a ton of work from that. And I said, you know what? It's got to go on the resume if people are going, hey, I saw you on Last Comic Standing. My audition process, I was asked to audition, but I was brought in from a comedy club owner who guaranteed me a slot. And when I got there, it turned out this comedy club owner was absolutely full of it, and I did not have a slot. So I had to stand in line in Chicago in January outside of the Blue Note Cafe for like 6 hours. And I decided, well, if I'm going to have to do this, I am going to have way too much fun. And I went to a local convenience store and bought a fifth of Jack Daniels and was sharing with comedians and things like that. Anytime the camera came by, apparently I was the only entertaining one, because I was just taking it like, hey, I'm probably never going to even get on this show. I might not even get to the front of this damn line, so I'm just going to have fun with it. And I found out later, years later, because I worked with I met one of the people who was on the camera crew from that show. I found out later they used lots of my standing in line footage at their holiday Christmas reel. So I'm very famous among the technical crew and the handful of people who used to watch that show an awful, awful lot.
Well, you had fun with it, and now you're also a regular on Food Network's Mystery Diners. You enjoy that?
Oh, yeah. I love doing that show. That show is a riot. It's always fun. Anytime they need a middle-aged man who looks good in a suit and needs to speak with authority, I am usually the Mystery Diner Andy they call upon. And one of the things I love doing about that show is it's kind of a guilty pleasure show. Meaning that a lot of people don't ever want to admit they watch it until they come up to you and go, wait, did I just see you on the Food Network? And then they're like, oh, my God, I love that show. But it has happened since then where I'll be eating at a restaurant somewhere in the country, and mysteriously I start getting ridiculously good service.
Yeah.
And I can always tell. I'm like, oh, these are people that watch Mystery Diners. They must think I'm trying to, you know, cover their
check them out,
their faux pas, you know. Yeah, so it is always fun doing that show. The crew on that show is absolutely the best. Among the people I've worked with over the years, they are always my favorites. Anytime they call, I immediately answer the phone because I'm always happy to do anything for those guys.
And you know, people can hear just your bubbly personality and stuff. Seems like a perfect fit for The Price Is Right. Now you do The Price Is Right live. That's not the Drew Carey show, but it's the same basic stuff, right? It's just something that goes on the road. What's that like?
It's a live version of the famous television game show. We're produced by the same company, Fremantle Media, and we travel the world. The show has actually been doing theaters and casinos and traveling the country for 14 years now, which is why I'm in Wilmington, Delaware right now. We're about to do a show in a couple of hours here, and I'm the announcer for that show. So I'm the guy who says, come on down. I'm the, hey, come on down. You're the next contestant on Price is Right Live. I'm that guy.
Yeah. Was it Johnny? I can't remember his name that was made that famous, that line.
Oh, Johnny Olsen. Yeah. Johnny Olsen. He was the long, long time announcer, and then Rod Roddy replaced him. And I'm just kind of keeping on in a grand tradition, just on the smaller set. I always tell people, you know, when you see a Disney movie, an animated Disney movie, and then 6 months later, suddenly you have Little Mermaid on ice. I always tell people, we're kind of like Price is Right on ice. We're like the live touring version of that show. And considering we play a lot of hockey arenas, sometimes we actually are Price is Right on ice. but it's just a smaller scale version, and it's great because there are a lot of people who will never get the chance to go to L.A., and so this is a way of bringing a piece of Hollywood to you. We have a lot of the same games. There's tons of the same excitement. We play to packed, sellout crowds everywhere we go. I mean, just yesterday, we must have had 3,500, almost 4,000 people in the audience, it was pretty spectacular. We were at Old Dominion University in Virginia, wherever the heck we were in Virginia. I should know the town, but when you're on the road, every town just kind of becomes the same town, and you forget where you are. It's that joke where they all the rock stars look at they're about to say hello, and then they look at their hand, hello, Cleveland! You know, it really happens. You just lose track of time.
Well, one place you played that you're never going to forget, you played in front of President George H.W. Bush. Tell us a little about that, because it's always a thrill, whether you love him or hate him. It's a thrill to be in front of the President of the United States.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, I always tell people I perform for the original, not the sequel. That's the George Bush I perform for. And I can make this story comes out in my book as well. I can lay no claim to having physically seen the man at all. I just know that as a result of my working for Ringling Brothers, one of the first bookings I had for Ringling Brothers, the Washington Press Corps always throws a big dinner for them. Now, this was not the nerd prom where we hear about. It was a different one where kind of the press corps throws a dinner that salutes the Congress and says, hey, thank you for letting us write horrible things about you all year. And I was there for that. And among the people on the guest list were the president and many of the senators and congressmen. And Ted Kennedy was there. I got to meet Ted Kennedy that night. And I had kind of the coolest part of that gig. My job was essentially to stand at the top of the elevator just to the right of the entrance of the hotel and tell everybody where to find the party. But as I said, I can't really say that the president saw me do anything spectacular because, you know, all I know is that I did have to go through a little Secret Service screening to make sure I wasn't, you know, a murderer or anything like that. And for all I know, he was probably escorted in through some back hallway if he was even there. But I do know for a fact that Ted Kennedy, John Glenn, I met so many people. I was only like 19 at the time, maybe 19 or 20 at the most.
Excited.
And I think probably about 19. I think George H.W. had just been inaugurated. And, you know, I wasn't a very politically minded kid, but boy, every break I got, I called home immediately and said, oh my God, I just met. And I'd tell my mom and my dad who I met, and they would just be freaking out over every single one. They're like, oh my God, what are you doing? What are you doing in clown makeup shaking Ted Kennedy's hand? I said, that, I wish I knew.
You look at what you do, and you do everything, and that's why you're so popular in the corporate set, because they love having you there. You got a great personality, but there's one thing that popped out. You know, you juggle fire, you swallow fire, all this thing. And I remember it as a kid because I always associated it, Andy, with I had to go to school the next day. And that was in the Ed Sullivan Show, the plate spinner. And it is so great to know you do the plate spinning. How do you learn that?
I learned that act quite specifically because I was on a circus at the time. And the person who was doing the plate spinning act broke his foot like 3 hours before showtime. And we were scrambling to figure out how we were going to fill the time. And the show owners knew that I had at least an hour's worth of juggling entertainment in my bag with me, and they wanted to know if I could do a plate spinning act. And me being, you know, 19 or 20 and stupid as all get out, I said, well, how hard can that be? And so before the show, I took the time with the plate spinner, who was wrapping his foot in an ace bandage. He didn't know how badly broken his foot was yet. And he kind of walked me through how to do it. And so I went out on stage that night, and I was only supposed to spin 6 plates. I ended up breaking about 50 plates. It was the funniest plate spinning act that has ever been witnessed.
Yeah.
And I never did get all 6 plates spinning. Next day, I nailed it. First day, I was so nervous. And after that, I finished the tour, and I had kind of perfected the act. And the guy I replaced built me my own plate spinning setup and said, here, you've got an act you can use forever. And I never expected to use it again. I thought, everyone's seen this old thing. There's no chance in the world that I'll ever need this again. And it turned out that was one of the things that's gotten me a lot of work over the years, is that there just aren't many plate spinners.
Yeah,
that's why I bill myself as the last great plate spinner, because I really don't think there are that many left on the planet.
Well, I think it's great, because it's just so nostalgic. It reminds you of being a kid. It's great.
Oh, it's a wonderful act for kids and adults, because adults can relate to it for that same reason. Once you have kids and once you've got a job and responsibilities, you feel like you're constantly keeping these plates spinning. And then as a kid, it's just exciting to watch somebody, you know, when you're a kid, you just like the idea of somebody breaking mom's dish.
Right.
And it really is that simple.
And you will hear more from the multi-talented Andy Martello in just a moment. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
World-class hotels, dining, gaming, special events, and more. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
Are you looking to save money on your prescription medications? Are your prescription costs too high? Are you paying out of pocket for your meds? Or is your copay too high? Well, if you answered yes to any of these questions, you've got to check out the RX Cut free prescription discount card. And getting your free discount card is easy. All you do is go to the website rxcutdiscounts.com. The free RX Cut prescription discount card allows you to get significant discounts on either brand name or generic prescription medications, and it also works on meds with high copays. There are no fees, no forms, no personal information needed, and the cards are active immediately. Discount cards are also good for the entire family, and they never expire. Again, to get your free discount cards, visit rxcutdiscounts.com. You may get the free discount card either by U.S. mail, email, text, or simply print out the discount card online. It's just that easy.
Dear Daddy, dear Mom,
I love you.
I miss you.
Every year, Snowball Express honors the children of fallen soldiers. Hi, everybody. I'm Tony Orlando. Join me in proudly supporting Snowball Express, a nonprofit that creates opportunities to help heal the children of our fallen heroes. We can never repay the sacrifice our soldiers have made, but we can honor them by giving back to their children. Donate now at snowballexpress.org.
You may not realize it, but there's a source of renewable energy right in your neighborhood, and you're helping to power it. Today, waste management is using the resources at our disposal to create energy from waste. enough green energy to power over 1 million homes. It's an idea we're proud to drive forward. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management.
Listening to Andy Martello, who, by the way, was just voted Best Local Author by the Best of Las Vegas Award Program. You can buy Andy's new book, The King of Casinos, at Amazon or at andymartello.com. Now, Andy, you were just telling us why plate spinning, which is part of your repertoire, is so popular.
It's not entertaining because the guy is spinning plates. It's entertaining because the guy might break a bunch of plates. And there's all this tension. Is he going to do it? Is he not going to do it? And that tension just builds that excitement. And when you finally have that moment, that great moment of release at the end, when you finally did it, oh, there's some yelling people for our show.
There we go.
Ready to come on now.
Good.
But yeah, the plate spinning act has that instant recognizable theme to it, and it's just fun. I mean, it's one of the few things I do that is just entertaining. For me, as much as it is for the people watching.
Well, when people go to your website, I know they're going to be, like I was, just shocked at all the different things you do. Also, though, I was looking at the people you've appeared with, and it's a long list. I can't go through all of them, but there's some great folks there. I mean, there's great groups like Blues Traveler, Cheap Trick, Phil Collins. I mean, those are Rock and Roll Hall of Fame persons, Buddy Guy. There's also Jerry Springer for, you know, crazy Hall of Fame. Again, you talk about talking to your mom and dad. A lot of great people you've been with, huh? You can talk about there.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that's two of the two books I have coming out. One is called Andy Martello's Stupid Stories About Famous People, which is essentially the ridiculous things I did or said while working with some of the famous people I've encountered over the years. And the other is a book about the hosts I've worked with in game shows and other television venues. And among the people... The one that seems to always get the most enjoyment, people really enjoy hearing about the time I worked with Audrey Hepburn. And this was still pretty, I was still pretty young in my career, but, you know, it doesn't matter what decade you're from, there are a few people as iconic as Audrey Hepburn.
Absolutely. Great classy and, look, you know, wonderful actress.
Exactly. The most elegant, graceful, beautiful woman on the planet, as far as I'll be concerned. And I was doing an event for UNICEF in Chicago, at the Palmer House Hotel, and me and a handful of other entertainers. And this is why I call it a stupid story, because I can't tell you with any honesty that I shook her hand, that I said, hello, Miss Hepburn, my name is Andy. I can't tell you any of this. I know there are photos of us together because we all posed for pictures, all the entertainers. I know we had a genuine moment, and that's where the story comes in, because I not only talk about how I got to work with her, but I couldn't help but notice this woman suffered every fool gladly that night. I mean, she shook every hand. She posed for every photo, was the most graceful, friendly person. She was as Audrey Hepburn-ish as you would hope an Audrey Hepburn would be. And there was a moment where I was just finishing up a break, and I was taking my last sip of water at a water fountain right by the elevators, and I could tell she was done for the night. She was finally going to be able to take off her beautiful gown and just relax and go to sleep. And I'm walking towards her. She walks towards me. She looks me right in the eye. She just, you know, posed for a picture with me maybe half an hour earlier. Smiles, that perfect Audrey Hepburn smile, looks at me with those beautiful eyes, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I have to say something to Audrey Hepburn. This may be my only chance. And I didn't want to waste her time, and I didn't want to run the risk of anybody else taking a picture with her, so I didn't want to stop her and shake her hand. And me being dumb as a bag of hammers in my late teens, early 20s, I look at her and I say, Miss Hepburn, you are one classy broad. And she smiles at me, gets on the elevator, hits the button, and she says, darling, you have no idea. And the elevator's closed, and there she goes. There's my Audrey Hepburn story.
That's a great one. I want to finish up with books, because I think, you know, you are an author. You're around Las Vegas. Hopefully we'll get to see you sometime there. But the one thing that really jumped out at me, too, was this book, The King of Casinos. And that's all about Las Vegas, the mob and all that kind of stuff. Was that fun to write that? I would think it would be.
Oh, it was. I tell everybody, it was my very first book, and I'm very proud to say it's won 14 awards. And it's the people who have read it, it really resonates with them because it was never intended to be a book. It was supposed to be a hobby. It was just, I discovered a picture of this casino that was in the Searchlight, Nevada, about 60 miles away from Las Vegas. And the casino owner was a guy named Willie Martello. And my last name isn't common. So to find somebody with the same last name who ran a casino and there was a brothel there and all these, I just thought, how fascinating. All I wanted to do was find out if the guy was alive, if the place was still open, if I could collect a poker chip from the place. That was it. It was just supposed to be a hobby.
Right.
8 years later, I had amassed tons of different pieces of memorabilia, countless hours of interviews and stories. And I just kept, the more I learned about this guy, I was like, God, somebody should write a book about this guy. And I'm sitting there looking at all this crap I've collected. I said, well, you idiot, you should write the book. And that became the impetus for me breaking down and saying, hey, I'm going to go ahead and write a book. And having never written a book before, I've been writing since I was a kid, but I've never written a book of any kind, just like columns for newspapers, this, that, and the other. And I thought, well, shoot, I don't want to write a boring history
right.
book because I'm the worst to talk about being a writer insofar as I don't read a lot. I've always said if I didn't write it, the likelihood of me reading it is very, very slim. And I just remember thinking to myself, if I'm going to read a biography or a history book, I want it to read like a novel. I want it to be entertaining. And this particular book, I want it to be more like, you've been around Vegas. I wanted it to be more like, rather than me just rattling off names and dates, I wanted it to be more as though we were sitting in a bar and some Vegas old timer just got done telling me this hysterical story about something that happened to him at the Sands. We get a laugh and I say, hey, well, did you ever hear about Willie Martello and the El Rey Club? And I just start telling him stories as if we were sitting in a bar. And it's really connected with people because he was doing things in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, 60 miles away from Las Vegas, that they didn't start doing in Vegas until the 80s and 90s. He was far and away, well ahead of his time in the casino world. He inadvertently launched the career of Francis Ford Coppola. He just did innovative things, and he's not famous. Nobody knows who this guy is today. He should be like Steve Wynn or Howard Hughes, and yet nobody's heard of it.
Yeah, and it also brings together Senator Harry Reid and prostitution. You got to read the book to figure out how they connect, but that was a big part of that, too.
Senator Reid grew up there. His mom, you know, did the laundry for all the local businesses in town, including the El Rey Club. So there's a little bit of everything in this book. There's Hollywood celebrities. There's vintage Las Vegas. There's adultery. There's a little bit of mobsters. All the things that you would want in a Las Vegas book, this book has. And it also has the kind of cachet of being it's a great American story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it really is an American success story. And people who love rooting for the underdog, people who love hearing those little nuggets that, hey, I never heard this before, it has that appeal. We're talking, I can't even say I'm putting a cart before the horse because I have neither a cart or a horse, neither nor. But I can say that there is discussion about this possibly becoming a motion picture. And if that happens, then a whole lot of people will finally know about Willie Martello and the El Rey Club.
Well, that would be great.
It's available on Amazon. Check it out. You know?
No, I was just going to say, the book is The King of Casinos. You can get it on Amazon. You got another couple books coming. Andy, we want to keep following you. So probably the easiest way is to tell us where we can go to on the web to find out where you're at and what you're up to next, because you're always doing
absolutely.
Something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you can always go to my website, which is andymartello.com. That's M-A-R-T-E-L-L-O. You can also find me on Facebook. My fan page is Andy Martello Entertainment. And I'm on Twitter. I'm on all those things. If you just Google my name, Andy Martello, you will find out that I am the most famous, non-famous person in the entire world. I'm like a rash all over the Internet. But you can always find me somewhere. And if you can't find me there, just look up the schedule. Go to PriceIsRightLive.com and look up our touring schedule. I'm their announcer. I am their guy. So when we come to a town near you, stop by and say hi.
Sounds great. Andy, thank you so much. We'll keep following your career. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for talking to me.
And when we come back, you will learn about the new sensation in the world of gambling, skill-based gaming. You're listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Steve and Maggi.
Visit us at VegasNeverSleeps.com. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Steven Maggi.
What can you do to prevent mosquitoes from spreading West Nile virus? The most important thing you can do is get rid of standing water on your property now. That's where mosquitoes breed. Don't leave standing water in outside pet water bowls, old tires, potted plants, anything that holds stagnant water. Dump birdbath water and replace every 2 or 3 days. Drain and cover unused swimming pools. Let's do it together and hit mosquitoes where they breed. Learn how at beyondpesticides.org/mosquito. A public service message from Beyond Pesticides.
You'd never suspect that you could find natural beauty as part of a working landfill. You can. Today, waste management landfills provide more than 17,000 acres of protected land for wildlife habitats. Working closely with communities and the Wildlife Habitat Council, we can ensure there will be protected space for native animal and plant life to thrive. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management.
I'm here with Logan Reed, my own personal business coach. You know, a lot of people may think this is all a bunch of psychobabble and that kind of thing. But in reality, this is stuff that on the surface may seem like we're going to explore our background. But actually, we're just getting really in touch with ourselves to see how we can be more successful. Is that what you try to do with people?
It is. So I'm not so interested in what's happened in the past. What I'm looking for is where people are now, where they want to be, and coaching always takes place in the gap. So what are the things, where are the places where they're getting stopped that's in that gap? And then when we move through those, they end up having what they want, whatever their goal is for themselves.
Okay, we're all excited about it now. So how do we get involved? How do we get more information about you and what you're doing?
Sure. You can give me a call at 360-529-1848 or email me at logan@loganreedcoaching.com. And you could also check out my website if you want to learn more about me at loganreedcoaching.com.
Well, when you think of Las Vegas, you think of gaming. It's what you do there. It's what draws everybody in. But they're always thinking in Las Vegas of what's going to attract the next big thing in gaming as well as everything else. And in gaming, it's got to be the sports games, you see, and some of these games where actually skill matters. And I'm really interested in something. I'm really excited that we have a chance to talk about it. With us today is Vince Lentini, the Chief Marketing Officer of Infinity Gaming Partners, which owns Silver Sevens, which is the first hotel in Vegas to actually take this on. Also with us is Carson Newth from Leet, L-E-E-T, and he's going to talk about the program itself and how it actually works. Well, guys, first of all, welcome. And Vince, I got to ask you, was this a big move for Silver Sevens? Because this is a totally different type of game that we've seen in Vegas, isn't it?
It is, and it is our introduction to e-gaming in Las Vegas. And we were really excited. We connected with the Leet guys and said, hey, is this something that we could do at Silver Sevens? We've got space. We've got the opportunity to do it. The other property in market that's doing it is downtown. We thought that we were far enough away where we could actually get a separate market for them. And we were really excited to join up with Leet and put together a program that introduces the e-gaming crowd to Silver Sevens and hopefully traditional casinos.
Well, you know, Vince, that's got to be exciting for Silver Sevens. Silver Sevens is a great place. If you haven't been there, it's off the strip, just a few blocks, but it's a fun place. You get a lot of people from town as well. Is that kind of exciting where it takes a casino that's not in the forefront of what you see on the strip or even downtown and gives an opportunity to kind of shine with something that's really different?
Yeah, we said Silver Sevens is incredibly placed to take advantage of this new e-gaming opportunity. And we said, hey, we've got a great casino floor. We've got great hotel rooms. We've got one of the best burgers, unknown burgers in town. So we basically said, let's go ahead and this millennial crowd that we're targeting, 21 and above, we can, you know, obviously go out there and give them something that they're interested in. And it's really a market that's underserved right now.
There's always that way of, okay, what's the next crowd? I mean, you know, things have changed. You know, Vegas isn't, you always hear it's not the same place as back in the days when the mob ran the place back in the 40s and 50s. It's always evolving. And it seems like a really great idea to go after this group, which are growing up now from the moment they're born practically to playing these games, and they're very familiar with them. And this is kind of what they want. I know I have some friends that are even under 21 that are getting ready to turn 21 that's what excites them about the idea that this might be there. I mean, is that something where you guys thought, we've got to get ahead of this thing?
Yeah, we thought, number one, it's the future of how gaming in general is going to go. It's got a huge market. When we sat down and talked to the executive team, I introduced them to concepts like Twitch and some other things that are out there and said, look, this person's online playing this game, and he's getting a million people watching his videos that are doing it. The distribution of e-gaming is so much greater than what we currently think of it, that it's a market that we think is completely underserved and something that we want to be on the forefront of.
Oh, I don't blame you. Now, Carson, I want to talk to you about Leet and what you guys are doing. You're a gaming technology provider. This had to be a big step for you, too, because this goes beyond, you know, this is not a slot machine. It's not the traditional games that we're all used to. But there are games that a lot of people are familiar with. I mean, Madden NFL, which my son loves and plays, like, for hours on end. FIFA, Call of Duty, Rocket League. Was the first challenge, how are we going to do this in a way that people can come here and play it and still manage to have a way to make a profit off it? Because this is always the thrill that some of these people are so good, they can't lose.
Right. I mean, one of the biggest challenges, I think, for any casino hotel property right now that they're facing is just getting a younger generation into the casino. I mean, I'm a part of the millennial generation, and I don't go into a casino and play slot machines. It's just a fact of life. So providing video games and Affinity stepping up and being one of the first people to have this opportunity on the casino floor or in their property to play video games in a competitive environment is a really unique place to be, especially from a competitive nature. People want to be in there. And just bringing people in the front door, they're going to be able to see what else Affinity has to offer in terms of, like, Silver Sevens is a great casino floor. It's a really lively vibe there. They have great food, great service. The people are great. And so we're bringing in a crowd that probably has never been to the Silver Sevens Casino before, and now they're engaging in their, you know, the gaming that happens on, like, FIFA, Rocket League, Madden, any of the video games. And then also you see a lot of them trickle over, and they're playing at the tables, they're eating at the restaurants. So it's sort of like a one-stop shop almost for, like, a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I know I tell people – I've mentioned a few people that this is there, and they're excited because their kids are going there, and you know, they're excited to go to Vegas. They don't know much about it, but when you tell them this is out there, they're really excited. How do you get the word out? I mean, this has to be a huge marketing effort for you, I guess, just to kind of, with something that's really different and new.
Sure. I mean, for us, I mean, we have a pretty decent list of locals that we know that play video games, and we use a few targeted advertising methods to get the word out. And on the Silver Seven side, they've been fantastic. They have one of the best marquees in all of Las Vegas. It's one of the most high-traffic marquees right on Paradise and Flamingo. And we're talking thousands of cabs drive past that every day. So you get almost better advertising than that than anything we could provide. But it's starting to show signs of some, you know, good uptick in customers and, like, knowledge about the space.
So how do casinos make money on this? Everybody says the same thing, you know. You can't have a bunch of people play Madden because one guy is going to be particularly better than another. So how do you do it where people can win money? I mean, how do you equalize the crowd, I guess?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the setup is pretty self-explanatory. It's like any tournament, any buy-in tournament that occurs on the casino side. People come in, they buy in, and we have a prize pool that gets distributed to the players. Where the casino makes money is on the gaming, non-gaming amenities that are there, you know. So Carson says that he doesn't go in there and play slot machines, but I'm sure he probably found his way to a table game at some point.
Right.
But also, you know, we run alcohol specials, drink specials, food specials during the entire tournament so that anybody who's playing, anybody who's observing can obviously go after there and take advantage of any of the specials. That's really where we're looking to make the money. And hopefully what the long-term position that we're looking to take here is that we can get traction on Sundays, we can own a day, and then we can build from there to the point in which we can build out a e-gaming space, we can build out a always available tournament space for the customers, for the e-gamers to come and enjoy anytime they want.
There's always the possibility, I guess, for cross-promotion too. So maybe somebody doesn't play blackjack or doesn't play roulette, what have you, but you're there, you're doing this stuff. Oh, by the way, now you're in this casino, might as well learn. So it's kind of an entry attraction too to some of these millennials and so forth, as you say, that are really into this, you know, and aren't familiar with the rest of what Vegas has to offer.
Yeah, and, you know, hopefully we have a fully built out William Hill sports book. We have table game slot machine offerings. Hopefully one of the offerings that we have there appeals and cross promotes to the gaming crowd.
I want to ask though, Carson, as you see the future of this down the line, I mean, is this something we're going to see like at most of the casinos, you think maybe in 5 years or something, or, you know, is this going to be a part of it? Because in maybe some of the same ways that the sports books, which have been there for a long time, but now are becoming even a bigger attraction.
Yeah, I think you'll have some portion of, you know, video games in every single casino in the next 5 years. I think it's important to stake a claim in the market early and establish your presence. One of the things that my generation really values a lot is authenticity. So people running in and being like, oh, now we have video games. It seems a little inauthentic, and yeah. I think that will, you know, drive some of the crowd away. You know, I think they understand that, like, you really need to be committed to it, and, you know, Affinity has proven that. I mean, they're here, they're doing what they can to stake their claim and, you know, build a foundation for the future. I think casinos in the future, you know, all of them will have some sort of offering of video games, whether it be a sports book type offering, or if it's head-to-head contests or tournaments. You know, I think we'll see a wide variety of offerings in the near future.
Yeah, and getting things like Madden NFL, for example, or Call of Duty, I mean, everybody plays that, right? Or a lot of people do. Do you think at some point you're going to see where maybe there'll be games really specific that they haven't seen, but something that somebody, you know, that play, because I know if you play those games, you can pick up pretty much any game with a little bit of instruction, you can get into it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the future holds for sure, but there's always new games coming out, and I think a lot of the traditional larger game developers and, you know, even gaming technology companies are trying to figure out a way to better integrate video games into, you know, slot-type games or, you know, games of chance. So,
yeah, so we have every Sunday, we have e-gaming set up. Registration is from 4 to 5. Play begins at 5 p.m., it's a $15 entry fee. November 20th is NBA 2K17. And then November 27th over Thanksgiving weekend is Madden NFL 17.
So let's tell people where they can go to get more information. First of all, if you run us through Silver Sevens and Affinity Gaming and where we can go online to find out more about this and make our plans to make sure we stop by on our next trip to Vegas.
Yeah, the easiest way to find out about it is www.silversevenscasino.com. If you go to the promotions tab, there is a esports tournament section there. It'll pop up and tell you everything that you want. By all means, please go look at it and you know, go on there and hit like or share for any of your friends who would be interested in playing any of the events that I had. In November, we're going to update the listings based upon demand to figure out what we're going to do on the Sundays in December. But we're seeing some pretty decent traction, and hopefully they'll come out and join us and play every Sunday at 5.
Vince, Carson, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
In a moment, he'll take a trip back in time with Steve Cutler of the Casino Legends Hall of Fame. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
As you may already know, trees do more than beautify our world. They help clean the air of carbon dioxide, a major greenhouse gas. As North America's largest recycler, last year alone, Waste Management recycled enough paper to save over 41 million trees. How's that for thinking green? From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think Waste Management.
Time now for another trip back in Vegas history with Steve Cutler, founder of the Casino Legends Hall of Fame. Liberace, regardless of how flamboyant he's been seen, and people laugh at the way he would dress and so forth, he really was an incredible showman. You were saying that was one of the best shows you ever saw going in there.
Well, actually, I saw him in 1975, and believe me, I went. I was invited to this show. It didn't cost me anything. I was only 24 years old at the time. I went kicking and screaming. I had no desire to go see him. But nevertheless, I went. And let me tell you something. At that time, the best show I've ever seen. And I've seen everybody from Frank Sinatra on down. He was unbelievable. The best showman ever.
Finally, the McGuire sisters. And that's particularly interesting. A lot of people don't realize the McGuire sisters were really an interesting act because they were involved with, as I recall, you know more about it than I do, with Sam Giancana, and that was all anybody that studies politics with the Kennedys and so forth. Really an interesting act, and it was one that people wanted to see.
Boy, that's true. There was certainly a mystique around them, and back in the 50s, McGuire sisters, they were it in Las Vegas, and certainly being Sam Giancana's girlfriend made it easy for them to stay employed and be around. They were terrific. They were another good example of, just Las Vegas staples. They were always here. And actually, Phyllis McGuire's home, from what I just understood, I just heard, is actually up for sale right now. But it's the same home that she's lived in that she had actually built back in the mid-50s. So pretty interesting, and I believe it's about 30,000 square feet.
We'll be back next week with another visit to the Casino Legends Hall of Fame. That's it for this week. See you again next week. And remember, Vegas never sleeps.
We'll see you next week for more excitement and energy from the desert. This is Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.